Hey, what's up, Toby? We've
Hey.
made it to another week of the Process Debt podcast.
Yeah.
I know. Another one in the
Here we
books.
go.
Today is your topic.
It is. It is. And I'm excited to dig into this. Thanks for entertaining me. As you and I've talked a lot about over the years, there is the how we work, but also so much of the why we work. And behind the why is always all these hearts and minds and people that are showing up every day and our most valuable asset walks out the door. So it's not just the human capital piece, but it's also what those humans do together. And so the musing that we were just touching on before we launched those, it's ultimately this idea of another form of process debt. And it's something that I would describe as cultural debt, the way that we all come together to interact. And I think a bit of this goes back to what is the relationship between how we work together and those norms that we develop, and whether those create healthy, vibrant process or we get into that world of all the myriad of reasons why process doesn't work, but it probably has less to do with the transactions and more to do with how we work as humans. So let me just pause there for a second. What's your thought?
No,
culture debt,
it's
process.
It's really interesting because if you think about just deep cultures in organizations, right? Like one of my favorite interview questions is, tell me who you'd rather work for in their heyday.
Oh,
yeah. Facebook, move fast and break things, right? That was their culture, right? Apple, design everything to the T's.
Yes.
Zappos, take care of the customers. Or Google, engineer things to its max, like to the technical max. And those cultures, right? Like those companies are different today, but like those cultures draw stuff. You know, the other one is Amazon, where they have a culture of don't ever do a PowerPoint.
Yeah, very pragmatic. Let me ask you. So, and then I'll share mine, but of the ones that you just listed, five great recognizable organizations that most of us have some real familiarity with as consumers.
Yep.
Which one of those would you have rather worked at in its heyday based strictly on culture? Which one of those resonates with you?
I would probably go Google.
Mm.
Most likely because I have a deep fascination in how they've strategically engineered everything.
Yeah.
To have the systems do the systems,
right?
Even like think about what happened. Wait, like if you had a problem with your Gmail, what would you do?
Right.
Or how long would it take to get to a human? And I'm not even like. So that's it's a really interesting cultural decision that they made. But that to me, that's very elegant because they've thought through a lot of things.
Yeah, I love that.
And then the next is Apple. And I do like Facebook's move fast and break things. I just despise the company.
Well, and there's always a little bit of that. So I like the framing of in its heyday. You know, for my part, I was really taken. I had an opportunity to see Tony Hsieh, once upon a time CEO of Zappos, present.
Oh, wow.
Down in Austin at South by Southwest Tech Fest. I think he was 08, 09. But Buddy and I were going down there. We did it a couple of years. And he was really just starting to reveal their culture. And I think implicit in your response was there's a trade-off to some of these things, right? Engineering everything to the ends means there's a long time before it sees the light of day.
Oh, yeah.
And then with Zappos, this idea of one of the stories he shared was he was hanging out with some buddies and they're like, no way. Nobody's customer service is that good. And he's like, yeah. They weren't even in, Zappos was headquartered in Las Vegas at this point. They just finished the move or were in process of moving. And he said, well, why don't you just call up the number and see if they'll order us a pizza? Get us a pizza. For anybody that doesn't know Zappos, like they were all about shoes, right? Zapatos.
Yeah.
So sure enough, Tony Hsieh and his guys are sitting there and one of the guys gets on the phone. He's like, hey, I'm in the Bay Area and I need a pizza. And they're like, what part of the Bay Area? what kind of, do you like Chicago? You like New York? Like what's your pizza jam? So over the course of, I may not remember this right, but within a half hour though, this guy who has nothing to do with pizza delivery takes their order and gets them a pizza, doesn't even know that Tony's in the room. And that is what like insane customer service is about. And so What I love is that all of these are remarkable companies. Each one of these is going to have a place where it shines, and then it's going to have costs. And I think the idea of cultural debt, it's not that it's much like process debt. It's not good or bad. We all carry some, you know, by putting our heart and soul into one, a very clear mission and aligning the talent to deliver on that mission, we're going to have blind spots.
You know,
we're going to have some hiccups. And so I think at the heart of it, the idea of culture debt, though, is really about what are maybe the unknown costs that we don't always appreciate. And so it's delightful. It's a great story that I can call a shoe company to get a pizza delivered, but it also means that a legitimate customer couldn't access that resource for a half hour.
Yeah.
Now, there's certainly going to be, I'm retelling that story 15 years later because I was so impressed and I didn't even get a slice out of the deal. But I think that some of cultural debt is like, what does it mean for us to manage as an organization?
Yeah. Well, and let's pull it back, right? Because we just told great stories of positive culture, right? How does that culture degrade?
Totally.
Or, there's the famous stories of, Enron, right? Where it's a culture of greed, right? And complexity.
But also of innovation.
Yeah.
They led with innovation. Totally. They were made a darling. This is how you get on the cover of Business Week. And the cultural cost was challenging people at an individual character and moral level as this became a pervasive norm and expectation. It was bad habits of shredding documents that are subject to public audit and accountability, of making phantom companies and pocketing the bonus as you buy an island in the Caribbean. And
We've also talked about Wells Fargo. I mean, they were in the news for setting up like it's interesting when your culture goes away from the story and the humans.
Yes.
It's so easy to just point a finger and just be like, it almost becomes like this gut-wrenching pain.
Yes.
Of I want to go and hurt someone at that because they didn't take care of their fellow humans.
It's an interesting question. And I think a little bit of the exploration that I want to be sure we touch on is a lot of this comes down to what are the habits that both reinforce how we achieve our mission, but also what are the habits that provides checks and balances?
Yeah.
So it's not just how do we drive revenue or how do we go fast and break things?
Yeah, yeah.
It's also how do we go slow and fix things once we decide we're going to keep them? Innovation unfolds quickly, but we have to harden it if it's going to be persistent for Gmail to work for decades, for example, right? I don't know. There's a handful. There's probably something that comes to mind for you too, as you think about
what strikes me. And sometimes I love these conversations because we spin off into, these rabbit trails. But what strikes me here is like, when you're talking about culture debt, you're almost like, when you're talking about culture, you're almost always exposing something that's great or something that really went very wrong.
Right. Yeah. But there's little fundamentals, right? So do we have habits that are important enough to be rituals? Do we have a way of always chopping wood? What's the day-to-day expectation?
Yep.
You got to show up at work. You got to move work forward. You got to dot your I's and cross your T's before you hand it to the next guy and make it their problem. Yeah. Those are just foundational. They're not unique to a culture, but if your culture doesn't value those things, go fast and break things has a whole bunch of broken crap. Right?
Yeah, for sure.
I also think about there's this inherent assumption, and we navigate through the world as individuals with assumptions.
Yeah.
But organizations are just big organisms.
Yep.
And when we move too far too fast and never clarify assumptions, right? And have explicit conversation, those unspoken assumptions mount, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I thought Chris was going to double check it. And Chris is like, well, I thought totally it was the Enron world. So
that's funny. Well, it's interesting, right? So like on both sides, with culture oftentimes comes story, right? Comes art, comes like all these things that come with that we expect from a culture.
Absolutely.
And yet you know, like thinking about cultural debt, you end up with the victim's story.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's not some, it just doesn't sell well.
Yeah.
Over the long haul. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Who wants to say, yes, we have cultural debt. That sounds like we're deficient, you know, but I think if we recognize that it's a real cost of starting something, whether it's a new product line, brand new venture.
Yeah.
Any of these debt elements, I think it's just, how do we move a little faster than we could otherwise afford? And so move fast and break things is fine. When is it that we're going to come back though and put in place the practices of clean it up and harden those things that are worth keeping?
Yeah. What's interesting as we're sitting here today, last week we ran the podcast, you know, on Tesla that we did earlier, right? Yeah. So we did a rewind. Yeah. It's interesting to think about what's happened, their cultural debt.
Oh my gosh. Right.
So if you think of Tesla as being like this super impactful brand.
Yes.
That basically is basically made major swings at the ball and hit many, many home runs. And yet at the top, you have a person that is the CEO who will remain nameless, who, you know, name starts with E and ends with Lon.
Yeah.
And what's funny is he's gone on record and he has said that he was the one that invented Tesla.
Yeah. Which we all know to be contrary.
Which is not true.
Yeah.
He has gone on record to say many things. Now, he has done some great things for Tesla, and Tesla would not be what it is outside of him being in that leadership role. And yet they have some culture debt, and that culture debt is the principal is due.
Or it's coming due. It absolutely has. Well, think about when the tone at the top allows you to lay claim to work that's not yours. When the tone at the top speaks in these really broad, you know, generalities, it's really hard to feel like you're connected to all of your own good work, or that it's important to be honest and accountable and transparent.
Yeah.
So I think charismatic leaders in particular lose sight of that, you know, that a healthy culture allows everybody to have some fingerprints on it and also has some shared accountability. And I think that idea of visible accountability, maybe that's really at the heart of what makes cultural debt so slippery. Process debt blows up in our face. Invoices didn't go out. We have no cash. Nobody gets paid. Well, shit. Cultural debt, though, is invisible. And I think that's what makes it tricky. And so when you couple an invisible debt that's going to come due, like a ticking time bomb, just don't know it, with a lot of unspoken assumptions or bad habits, then it's a dangerous game of hot potato. So,
well, and what makes cultural debt so hard is, and that it's invisible.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to predict.
Whew. Yeah.
The end, right? Because if you're the one on the line in one of the gigafactories,
right,
and you're doing stuff, right? Like, you might know what's going on, right? Like, there might be rumblings of, like, what is Elon doing with the president?
Yeah.
Right? Like, there might be these rumblings, but to be able to predict what's going to happen is so hard, right? Because let's say his robo-taxis worked.
Right.
Game over, right? Like, all of a sudden, stock takes off. You know, they just gained a couple billion in market cap. Easy peasy.
That's right.
But if you miss on robotaxi, which it looks like they have, right? And you miss on, you know, I saw another thing. What's interesting is you start to see, like, what I've started to notice is you see the robotaxi come out. You're like, oh, Elon got in trouble, right? Stock started to slip.
Yeah.
Push timelines on this, right? Oh. Robotaxi hits a parked car.
Yes.
Oops. Right? That's a problem. Okay. And then you start to see what the next thing is, right? And so what's interesting is you start to see these pushing of timelines.
Yeah.
And that culture is eventually going to implode. Now, that flywheel is moving so fast, and it's they're throwing up so much cash that like it is a slow cultural demise.
You know, I think what's interesting is you have this cultural issue where longstanding norm is people making claims that aren't true, and that yep. just kind of passes in the public, even if internally it's debated. I wouldn't know. But then you also have products that don't deliver on what they said. And now the underlying business model of, you know, it's not about the cars they sell as much as the green credits that they can sell on the secondary market yeah. to offset yeah, carbon yeah. emissions. And yep. I think that's often lost in the public eye, that it's not about the vehicles, it's about energy management yep. consumption, that one of the biggest industries in the world. And so the revocation of the EV tax credits is going to drive yeah. down new acquisition. I can't imagine it being anything other than that, which yep. has the very indirect cost then of wiping out this enormous revenue stream. So what feels today like an impossible company that is going to be here forever, and I'm sure folks thought the same about Sears and Roebuck and Kmart yeah. and Toys R Us
yes.
for different reasons, you yep. know. But there's a wealth of companies that have gone by the wayside for a myriad of reasons. And yep. I think maybe today's argument is that it's not always bad finance. It's not always about, you know, political will or legislation that moves against, or even a one bad product launch. But yep. when the cultural foundation is weak and that invisible layer is fraying or falling apart underneath, there's a host of things that just simply aren't going to react to help solve when the other problems show up.
Yeah, you end up, and we can kind of end it here, but you kind of end up with a black swan event.
I love that. Well said.
Where literally the risk is outsized in comparison to the rest of the market.
Yeah.
And it's unpredictable. It's not, you can't predict it. Like, we can guess.
Yeah.
But that it's we're putting a flyer out there.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the end of the day, the more kind of moral decline, the more cultural debt we have, the more probability that we have of these large
right.
2008 events where Lehman crashes.
That's right.
Where Enron dies, right? Like where we because we've lost sight of taking care of other humans.
Yeah. Nassim Taleb.
Yeah,
I wanted to call that out. Black swan is a super interesting idea. We're not getting into it on this. And Chris, I'm 100% in alignment that I would dare say a number of black swan events probably track back to unmanaged practices, yeah. weak tone at the top. That was yep. certainly the case in 08, right? And lack of accountability. So cultural debt, it's part of the debt family. I'm glad we could talk about it today.
This is great. Thanks, Toby. Catch you next week.
It's a deal. Have a great week.
See you, man.
Take care.